Hello, and welcome to On Repeat with Beth and Susanna. This is a frank and honest podcast about the reality of living with OCD. Disclaimer, we are not mental health professionals. Please visit OCD Action for services that can help and support you. Spoke to the incredible, generous and open Olivia Bamber.
You know what? Therapy's going to be so hard, but it's nowhere near as hard as living with OCD. I think if someone had told me that, that would have been massive, because maybe I would have engaged in one of the therapy courses that I'd been on before. I guess reassured that it will get better. There would be like a life after it, because I had completely given up at that point.
Olivia works for OCD Action, helping to support others whilst also coping with her own OCD from day to day. Olivia bravely went to an extreme OCD camp in America, an intense and full-on experience which was filmed for the BBC. Her drive to keep fighting and push herself out of her comfort zone is an inspiration.
And we would like to be best friends with her now, please, thanks.
You will too after this. Enjoy! Oh, we just kind of wanted to start by asking you how you're doing. And I mean, because obviously lockdown is a little bit weird.
Just a little bit.
Just want to know how it's kind of affecting your mental health, or whether you've managed to be like finding it really nice to just have a break from everything. How's it impacting you, do you think?
I guess a bit of both, really. It's kind of what you said. It's like, it's quite nice to have a break. I think with living in London, like, it's nice not to have to get the tube.
Yeah.
And you know, feel kind of the pressures of being busy all the time. I live with my boyfriend and we have to like schedule a night that we just have in the house, like when we're not locked down, just because everything's so busy. And I think London can just be like that, and life generally can be like that sometimes. So it's nice to have kind of slower pace of life. But at the same time, I do miss like the routine of kind of going into the office. I'm working from home at the moment, as I'm sure many people are. I do miss the routine of kind of going into the office and the routine of kind of seeing people. Because I think a lot of that is what keeps you well, generally.
Yeah.
I guess I was quite anxious when we like went into sort of lockdown, self-isolation, that like OCD wise, it would be tricky, because a lot of my sort of compulsions and obsessions will revolve around things at home. So I was kind of worried about that and not having kind of the distraction of going out and seeing people and things.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been as bad as I expected. I think like generally it's a bit tricky at the moment anyway, but it hasn't, I wouldn't say lockdown's made it worse. I think it's just kind of stayed the same.
Oh, that's good.
So yeah, I've been trying to kind of use the time to like actually challenge myself on things, but it is so hard, isn't it? And especially when, you know, you're kind of just in the house all day, every day, it's quite like,
because I think I've been kind of feeling like I should be using this time to challenge the OCD on certain things, because I'm like, I've got nothing else to worry about, really. So I should be using this time where I don't have to stress about, you know, finding a job or going out and doing things which may normally worry me. I should be using the time to work on getting rid of certain compulsions or, you know, those kind of things. But I'm actually finding it really difficult because I don't have the motivation of seeing
your friends
and going out and doing things
the rest of life.
Yeah,
you don't want to just be fighting your OCD and then not have any kind of
reward
treat.
Yeah,
I actually remember when I first had CBT when I was a child, and every time we'd always go and get like, I don't know, a donut or something from the shop around the corner afterwards.
Yeah.
Like the kind of, because I remember the therapist being like, you need to do something nice for yourself afterwards.
Yeah, we used to go get, me and mum used to go get a scone.
Maybe it's like important for people to remember that during this time, to kind of not beat themselves up if they're finding it difficult to.
That's the thing, isn't it? Like, although maybe we don't have as much to do as usual, like we're still living in the most surreal time ever. So
awesome.
I think like, yeah, and I constantly beat myself up of being like, oh, I've not done enough. I should have done more. I should have used this time more productively. And it's like, no, actually just kind of waking up and just being in the day is hard enough at the moment, because it's so strange. And you see on Instagram, don't you, people kind of doing all these amazing projects and learning new languages, and which is totally great. But I think if the only thing you can do is just get up in the morning and like have a shower or just get up and make your bed or whatever, that's enough.
Yeah.
And the same with kind of working from home. Like, we're not, I read something which you've probably seen online or something, which I can't remember the exact wording, but it was like, we're not working from home, we're living in a pandemic whilst trying to work, or something along those lines. Yeah, you know, it's not your usual circumstances.
Yeah.
And I think people are, you know, I'm definitely guilty of kind of beating myself up for not doing enough, but I think what we're living through is so surreal at the moment. Yeah, we've just got to be a bit kinder to ourselves, I guess.
Yeah,
because I think people are being much harder on themselves than they would normally be, and I think it's because we have more time to just sit and think about ourselves.
How did you, and because you work for OCD Action, is that your full-time job, OCD Action?
So I'm part-time at OCD Action, and then I'm part-time at another company, which is totally different. It's the same kind of role, but a totally different sector.
Do you think it's quite nice to work, to kind of have a bit of space from being full-time thinking about OCD, or would that?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, because up until last November, I was full-time at OCD Action, and I have been for a number of years. I've worked there for nearly 7 years now, I think. And yeah, quite a lot of that time had been full-time. And then, yeah, in November last year, I decided that actually, like, I was going to kind of explore a new sector and, yeah, split my time in half a little bit. And I think it is, like you say, just to kind of have
a bit of a break.
A bit of a break from it, because if you live with it and you work in it, you know, all the time, it is quite all consuming. Like, that was all I ever spoke about and worked on. So I do find it now, yeah, a little bit more helpful to kind of just be there part time and just have a bit of a, you know, some separation from that part of the week.
Talk us through your brief. Give us a brief
of your kind of OCD journey.
Yeah. What was, when, because did you have it as a child, or has it kind of crept up on you as an adult, or what's your journey with it been like?
So in a brief as I can be when I'm quite a wittery person. Yeah, I started showing symptoms of OCD, I guess not sort of outwardly showing symptoms to other people, but what I know now to be OCD, from around the age of 7-8 years old, I think. And at the time it was quite sort of, it was like habits and routines. And there wasn't necessarily like an intrusive thought behind that. There was just this feeling of like, oh, if I don't do this, it doesn't feel right. Like, it doesn't feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think quite a lot of children describe that, you know, rather than it being a specific intrusive thought, it's just this feeling of, oh, if I don't do that, I don't feel right.
That's so true.
So it started like that. And it was like that for quite a few years. I got quite good at hiding it, I think, because I realized that some of the things I was doing were quite strange or embarrassing. Things like, you know, having an obsessive cough, or like doing sort of tapping rituals. And it developed from kind of those without this kind of intrusive thought to having an intrusive thought of, if I don't do this, something bad's going to happen. Something, you know, someone will come to harm, it'll be my fault. Kind of quite typical responsibility, intrusive thoughts. And it was around sort of mid-teens, I'd say 15, 16 years old, where it turned into what was my most prominent sort of manifestation of OCD, which I guess is quite sort of stereotypical. I'm doing inverted commas, not like you'll be able to see inverted commas on a podcast. Quite stereotypical kind of washing, cleaning rituals. But again, not with the intrusive thought that you would necessarily associate with that. So it wasn't kind of a fear of getting ill, or, you know, making other people ill. I wasn't really sure why I was doing it, but I just felt this kind of need to go over the top with washing clothes, washing things in my house, not letting things touch certain things. And yeah, sort of fast forward on, I got, you know, my parents took me to see people, and I was very like, no, I don't need help, I'm absolutely fine, like, leave me alone sort of thing. So I didn't accept a lot of the help that I was offered along the way. And it was only when I got to university, so I guess I was 21, that it just became all consuming. Like, it had kind of built up and it had become more and more time consuming over the years. And then when I was at university, it just got to the point where, like, I couldn't do anything on my own. People I was living with at the time were basically like caring for me. Like, I couldn't shower on my own, like, I couldn't get dressed on my own, because the contamination fears had become so strong. And at this point, I very much felt like I was the source of contamination for the world, and everything I did was going to kind of contaminate people. And it was only kind of after I'd probably seen like 3 CBT therapists up until the point where I got to university, and then I got to the point where I just didn't leave my bed, like, wouldn't leave my room, kind of dropped out of university. And it was then when I self-referred for therapy, because I kind of to be honest, I'd kind of given up. Like, I had really bad depression, and I was just like, there's no point me doing anything because it's just all the time. Yeah. It's like taken over my life, and I kind of given up on my own life. But it was seeing the effect that it had on other people, like seeing the people that I was with at university, you know, how it was affecting them and how it was affecting my mom at home and my sister. And that I was like, okay, fine, I'm going to self-refer. When I self-referred, I think because I took myself to therapy, I really gave it my all. And through that course of therapy, we kind of figured out with the therapist that actually my fear was of things that smelt bad. So I would fear sort of certain foods, public transport, but not for kind of getting ill. Again, it was kind of this, oh, if I sit on this seat, what if someone sat on this seat who smelt bad and then it's on me and then I'm going to spread it to the world? And it's always kind of remained as that has always kind of remained as one of my biggest fears, is things that smell and could latch onto me and then that I will kind of spread around. And it's this feeling of like a worry of it getting out of control. So even now I have it where, you know, I'll touch something and then I'll think, oh, I could challenge myself to not do that. And then I'm like, no, but I'll touch that and then it will go onto that and then it will become out of control and I won't be able to kind of contain it anymore. So yeah, lots of therapy sort of courses. And after that course, I went and did other ones. I went to America and did the BBC program, the most intense therapy that I'd had.
What was the program? Because I think we might have watched it.
It was called Extreme OCD Camp.
I remember that.
You wanted to go on it.
Yeah. I did.
Do you mind just quickly telling us what that was like? What did you have to do?
It was great, actually. So I had undergone this really good course of therapy in my second year of uni, which had kind of really turned my life around. And then I'd gone into third year of uni, and although I was still challenging my OCD, and I had definitely got past the worst point. I'd got past the point of feeling like, you know, I couldn't do anything, to where I was kind of living semi-normally again, and I was kind of starting to gain my independence back. But I was still really struggling with OCD. You know, there was still this big chunk of things that I hadn't overcome. And my sister found this advert on OCD Action's website while she was looking for work experience for me. And then she came across this advert and she was like, oh, you should totally do this. And I was like, that's the worst idea ever. I would never go on TV and talk about this. Why would you think I'd do that? But I ended up giving the producer a call just because I'd seen like a few bad programs by OCD. And at this point, I've never spoken to anyone about it. I hadn't really heard a lot about it. I didn't really know much about OCD Action or any other charities. I didn't realize there was this huge community of people who kind of spoke to each other.
Yeah.
But I remember ringing the producer just for like research purposes. And I thought, I'm going to tell her like my story, but only because I want to I want to kind of have a part in at least this program being a good program. Like maybe I can tell her something that'll help kind of shape it into a good program.
Yeah.
And I just got like, she was the most lovely person. And I just ended up becoming into this like, oh, would you actually want to be on it? And I was like, oh, well, I'm not really sure. And anyway, months and months kind of down the line of different kind of filming things, and I got accepted onto it because there were six of us. And yeah, it was the best thing I've ever done, really. Like absolutely the best thing I've ever done. I think just kind of meeting people and, you know, actually kind of realizing that there's other people out there with OCD, and going to this camp in America where we had the most wonderful therapists. And it was kind of a really intense 10 days of CBT with exposure response prevention. And yeah, it just really helped me kind of challenge a lot of things that I hadn't had the time to do in my course of therapy the year before. So yeah, it made a huge, huge difference. And I always say this and then realize it sounds incredibly cheesy, but genuinely, I speak to everybody off that program like daily. You know, we're still incredibly good friends, like genuinely like my best friends. Which
is a major thing.
Yeah, and it's just made a massive difference. I think just having those people kind of in my life that, you know, understand and totally get where you're coming from has just made the biggest difference.
What was it like being filmed going through that extreme kind of vulnerable, scary therapy?
You did genuinely forget that the cameras were there. Like, I really forgot that they were there because the crew was so small and they were so friendly and they just became kind of part of the group and they were kind of in those sessions with you. Like, it didn't feel like they were a camera crew and we were being filmed. They were kind of encouraging us with exposure tasks. You know, they were doing exposure tasks as well as in, that sounds a bit strange, but you know how the therapist often gets involved in the tasks and does it with you. The crew were kind of doing the same thing and they just became part of this like bigger group. So it didn't really feel like we were being kind of watched or filmed, you just did genuinely forget that they were there. And they were so respectful. It was handled in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. And any time, you know, there was quite a lot of things that I said that I then, after saying them, would be like, you can't put that on. I'm too embarrassed to talk about that. And there's loads and loads of compulsions and obsessions that I still to this day haven't spoken about because I just don't feel comfortable. Yeah. And I told them so that they understood, but they didn't put anything on there that I didn't want them to. They stopped filming if we wanted them to. Like if someone was really upset and just kind of said, actually turn them off, they would. They always put us first over the program. And I think it shows, like, I think it was a really good program. And yeah. I think you can tell that the people involved in making it really did genuinely care.
You know, if it's still available to watch anywhere for anyone that might want to find it.
It is still on YouTube. My understanding is that it's on YouTube.
And it's called Extreme OCD Camp. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. And I think it's done in two parts. I think both parts are on YouTube.
I want to rewatch it.
Yeah, it was. And it was the best experience. And even now, like, we still talk to people who were involved in making it and we're still in contact with the therapist. One of the therapists, Pete, we met up with a couple of years ago in London when he came over to do, the OCD Stories camp that they ran. And I think it was only 2 years ago. So Jack and I, who was also on the program, met him for a coffee. And it's just, it's so nice that it still stayed like a massive part of our lives. And I've had to have therapy since. I actually only came out of therapy again in January. So I've had like other courses since. And I think that's the thing with OCD is it's not ever a straightforward journey, is it? It's kind of really up and down. And up until I had this most recent therapy session, you know, I would have classed myself as really well, like, you know, kind of 90% beaten OCD. And then last year it just got really bad again. And I think it's just recognizing that it has got bad and just being like, okay, I actually do need to do something about this. And
I think therapy, it only really helps if you've taken ownership of it.
Yeah.
I think if someone else is saying to you, go and get help, it's just not going to work. You've got to be there in your own mind thinking, I want to get help and I'm ready to get help.
Which is why it seems like it suddenly clicked for you, Olivia, when you self-referred.
Yeah.
It sounds like maybe that is quite a big step in the therapy working.
I think so. And it's so difficult because we speak to a lot of parents at OCD Action and through the helpline who, you know, they will ask like, what can I do to encourage my child to go to therapy? Whether it's an adult child or a young child, or, you know, loved ones might do the same. And you kind of have to be like, not that we would ever kind of tell someone what to do, but you've almost just got to kind of wait until someone feels really ready to do that. And it's so hard to do that. But I think it's the case with anything. It's the case with any bit of exposure homework you do. Like if my boyfriend said to me, okay, why don't we do this challenge today? If I wasn't feeling ready for it, even if I knew, you know, he was doing it to be nice and it's the best possible thing, I have to kind of be ready for it. And I think that is the case with OCD, and it's so difficult, especially I imagine if you have a loved one with OCD and you can see that therapy will help them, but they can't see that themselves. Yeah. But you've just got to kind of be as supportive as you can until they feel ready to do it. Because it does, you know, when you go and put the effort in, and it is hard work and you've got to put a lot of effort in, but when you kind of feel in that place and feel ready, it will work so much better than if someone else forces you to go.
It's also the thing, I think, when you're doing CBT and ERP and things, if someone else is choosing which exposure you're doing, because what may seem like the most kind of problematic thing in their eyes might actually be from your perspective, it might not be the thing that's impacting you most. Okay. So just because the kind of most outward, the thing that they see most, or the thing they think is, oh, that's taking the longest, or it's obviously causing them quite a lot of stress, might actually not be the most stressful thing you've got. So I think it's got to come from the person themselves saying, no, this is what I want to tackle first. And if like a family member is helping you at home, you've got to be the one saying, no, this is what I want to tackle, and this is what I want your help with, not them saying, oh, we can help you with this today. It's kind of, it's got to very much come from the person.
Yeah. Do you recommend people that have had CBT maybe even 3 or 4 times and they're still feeling maybe how you did that, you know, at uni, where you were like, what's the point? I've tried it. Do you always kind of recommend to those people, if they call up on the helpline, like, give it another shot?
Yeah, and it again, that's, I realize how frustrating that is for people to hear, you know, if you've tried it numerous times and then someone tells you to do exactly the same thing that you've already tried, that's so frustrating. And I would get frustrated with myself if I heard that, but it really is, you know, it really can make a massive difference. And I think that's kind of what happened with me. You know, I did see three people, they were great, you know, I'm sure that they'd be brilliant therapists to other people, but they weren't right for me at that time. And it didn't work, and what they were offering was what is recommended. It was CBT with ERP, but I wasn't in the right frame of mind to do that. And they can be the best therapist in the world, but the timing might not be right, they might not be the right fit for you, you know. There's loads of things that can impact whether CBT works well or not. And since I've had three or four courses since, and you know, they have worked because I've gone and I've been motivated and I've done the homework. And I think it is so hard to hear that, you know, go back, give it another go. Yeah. But there are so many different factors that influence whether or not, you know, it works and whether it's the right time. And so I would always recommend that people go and give it another go and just, you know, find out about CBT beforehand and what makes a good therapist and what makes kind of good CBT, because it is, you know, it's not kind of generic talking therapy, you know, it's really got to be very proactive. You know, there should be a lot of homework, it should be really hard work, the therapist should get involved, your family and friends should be allowed to go along with you if they need to. You know, there's lots of things that make for good therapy. And I just think it's always worth giving it another go, as hard as that is.
It is also what you said about it maybe accepting that it might be something that you do need to do again, even if you think, even if you've had a really successful course of CBT. I've definitely done a similar thing to you, where I've been like, I would say I'm like 85%, you know, living OCD free, like this is amazing, like I'm fine. And then you kind of, it sneaks up on you and you're like, oh, and actually same as you, I ended up being like, no, actually I do need to go and do another course of therapy. Because, and even when I did that, which was a couple of years ago, I was like, right, this is the, this is going to be the time that I do CBT and that's it, I'm going to nail it, I'm going to get rid of this, and then I'm never going to have to do it again. And I'm now aware that that's not the case.
Yeah,
it might be something that for most people they might have to
keep doing,
either revisit with a therapist or with themselves, or just like just keep on top of, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is meant to teach, you know, CBT teaches you to kind of be your own therapist, but that doesn't mean that you don't need help again once in a while.
And also if you live on your own or something, doing CBT on your own with no support there with you can be really difficult.
Really difficult.
You massively might have to say no, you know, that's, you're giving it too much, because if you give it an inch, it's going to take a mile. So you need someone
to remind you.
Yeah.
I mean, that could not be more true, the whole give it an inch, it'll take a mile thing. Oh my god, the amount of times you'll just be like, oh no, I can reassure, I can get some reassurance for this, like that's fine, that's fine. Most people OCD would ask their friend if that's normal and okay, and like, and then you're like, it's fine, and then you realize a week later that you're spending 3 hours.
I've done it this morning, like this morning I've asked for reassurance this morning, and Freddie has just sat there and gone, do you want a cup of tea? No, like it doesn't say no, never says no to it. He'll just do something else to distract me. And even this morning I've gone off in a huff, like, why didn't I get that reassurance? I needed it today. But obviously ultimately deep down you kind of know it's not the right thing, but it's so hard in that moment to like, you just crave it so much.
That leads me to actually, and feel free to be like, don't want to talk about this, but in terms of relationships and like having a successful relationship, how have you found OCD has affected that?
Yeah, it's a big one, isn't it? It has massively affected things in the past. Because like I said, you know, when I was at uni, I couldn't shower on my own. I couldn't get dressed on my own. And that has a massive impact on your relationships, whether that's, you know, kind of in a loving relationship or with a friend or whatever. It has huge, you know, massive, massive impact. I've been very lucky in that people that I've kind of met have been like very understanding. Yeah, I live now with Freddie and we've been together for nearly 5 years. I told him on my first date that I had OCD. I was like, I'm just going to throw it out there, see if he accepts it or not. But yeah, I have felt very lucky in that he's been very understanding. He, you know, I had all my therapy sessions recorded and he listened to them every week, you know, has done a lot of research, has volunteered for OCD Action, you know, has really kind of gone the extra mile to become part of the exposure homework and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And the way he manages to not give reassurance is quite unbelievable. Because you get really sneaky with asking for it, don't you? Like, I'd be like, oh, I'm just asking for a friend if this is, you know. He's like, obviously I know that that's, you know, you asking for your OCD, but.
Yeah,
I feel very lucky to have kind of been around people who do understand, but then I've met a lot of people along the way who haven't been particularly understanding. And I think it's just surrounding yourselves with people who are willing to try and understand. I think, you know, no one without OCD will ever 100% get how it feels, because you just can't unless you, you know, live with it.
Yeah.
But I think just, yeah, someone who's kind of willing to try and understand and surround yourself with those kind of people. And because you will meet people along the way who don't believe OCD is real or tell you to snap out of it, or, you know, we've heard it all, haven't we? And I think, but there are good people out there who really want to help, and yeah, and who will take time just to kind of listen. And I think, yeah, that's the people to kind of surround yourself with. I don't know why I'm sounding like some sort of relationship.
Sorry, I kind of put that on you, didn't I?
No, but yeah, it does have a massive impact on everybody.
Yeah, it really does. It must, you must, as working on the helpline, you must get phone calls from people who are either a loved one or in a relationship with someone with OCD.
Yeah.
Asking how, do they ever kind of ring up and be like, how do I not give reassurance when, or, you know, help them and assist them in the thing that OCD is making so difficult for them?
Yeah. So I don't work directly on the helpline anymore, but we get calls. I'd say, I mean, this is totally off the top of my head, so I was going to say, don't quote me on this, but this is a podcast. But I'd say we probably get like almost as many calls from loved ones as we do from people with OCD or a related condition. I don't know kind of what the statistics are, but we get a lot of calls from parents, partners, siblings, you know, yeah, asking for advice, asking, yeah, how to not give reassurance, how to get someone to go to therapy. Or sometimes we get calls from people who are like, oh, I'm giving as much reassurance as possible. You know, I'm doing everything I can to kind of help. Which, and then you have to have that really difficult conversation of the fact that actually reassurance seeking is a compulsion, and it's
be cruel to
although
be kind.
Cruel to be kind, exactly.
So hard,
and the hardest thing in the world is not to give someone reassurance, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we do get a lot of calls from loved ones, and it's so difficult. It has as big an impact on them, I think. And seeing someone that you love suffer with something that's so horrendous like OCD is, it must be absolutely heartbreaking. This is going to sound like a plug, but we do have, like, you know, with the helpline at OCD Action is for friends and family as well, and we've got lots of things like support groups, you know, like Skype support groups specifically for partners, specifically for parents, and I think just kind of other parents being able to talk to other parents and that sort of thing makes a massive difference.
I know our mum really likes meeting other people who are in her situation, or hearing other people who are in,
because honestly it did feel like when I first was suffering with it, and then obviously you as well, it felt like there was no one else in the world that had it. That's how it seemed. So,
and did you know that you were both affected by it? Did, like, each of you know that you were both affected by it?
I think because obviously you, so Beth is 5 years older and she got it when she was about 9 or 10.
Yeah.
And then I got it when I was about 9 or 10, and I don't think I knew you had it before I had it.
Because you just didn't speak about it. Like, it wasn't something that we spoke about as a family.
I didn't even know you were going to therapy. I didn't know anything. I think I'd have just assumed you were like a drama thing.
Well, then I used to say to my friends, like, oh, I'm going to the dentist every single week on a Friday, missing science in like year 7. And because I would rather say that dentist than going to therapy. And it's
well, I dropped out of school for a little bit. And still my closest friends didn't know why. I'd never told them until probably like year 11 and up, and then upwards I then started telling people. And I remember someone coming up to me in a corridor, someone who was in my year group, I didn't know them that well, and I'm pretty sure she said to me, do you have OCD?
Really?
So it was obviously this like rumour. Someone had obviously come from somewhere, because a couple of people
knew. It's a bit forward,
knew,
isn't it?
And I just went, no. Because as an 11-year-old, who didn't really understand it myself, I thought it was this really embarrassing thing.
Same, yeah.
That I couldn't possibly say I had.
Yeah.
And I just outright denied it.
Yeah. I hope that's changing. I mean, obviously you work with the youth group, don't you? Do you work in the youth?
So yeah, I used to up until November. No, that's okay. It's I forget as well. So I just do communications now, but I did used to kind of do the youth project as well.
Do you think that sort of thing might be changing slightly for 11-year-olds now who would be going through that same thing? Like, do they feel able to speak about it, do you think, or is it still kind of shut down quite a lot?
I hope so. I think there's a huge amount of work being done by various different organisations and individuals. And like I said, you know, there is this huge community online, isn't there? It's absolutely amazing, like on Twitter and Instagram, and a lot of people kind of speaking out and sharing their experiences. And there's a lot more awareness generally in the media and things. OCD Action have done a lot of work kind of going into schools and giving talks. I know other charities have as well. So I really hope that it's a better position for people to be in, to be able to kind of freely speak about it. But I think there is still a long way to go until, you know, like, I just would love a world where you can go up to someone and say, I've got OCD, and they go, oh my goodness, that's so awful. Yeah. Are you okay? Rather than going up to them and then having to explain, oh, but it's not like what you see on TV, you know, it's not the stereotype. And I think a world where you could do that and people would take it seriously no matter who you told.
Yeah. You go up to someone and say, I've got OCD, and they go, oh, same, I can't stand for things.
Yeah. And then you're just going to go, you've either got to smile and nod and just kind of be like, oh no. But obviously, like, having the energy to actually tell them what it's about is so draining when it's kind of
bothered, don't you?
No.
It's hard. Yeah, really hard.
Actually, little side story. I was in a coffee shop a while ago, and they had a sign that said OCD, obsessive coffee disorder.
Right.
And I was like, I was really tired. I was like, can I be bothered to have this conversation? And then I was like, no, come on. Like, just really politely, just be like. And the woman got so angry, and she put the coffee machine on while I was talking, so she couldn't say that she could hear me. And so I just ended up shouting over the top. I like to think I wasn't shouting. I wasn't being aggressive. I was projecting. And I'm trying to remember what it was exactly that she said. I think she was like, well, we've got a customer with OCD and she likes the sign, so we're keeping it up. And I was just like, okay, you know, that's fine. But it just would have really helped if she'd kind of even just listened.
Yeah. Just to listen and be like, I understand.
Yeah, but I think the act of putting the coffee machine on was like,
that's rude.
I'm not even listening to you.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know why that was relevant.
Oh no, that's horrible though. And to be, you know, to be in that position where you've kind of like, I've taken time just to be like, please just listen. It's only a couple of minutes. And all she needed to do was be like, oh, I understand.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if she hadn't got rid of it, just to kind of at least acknowledge.
I'm still gonna leave it up because I love that sign. It's my favourite. But like, then I'd be like, okay, well, each your own, and I'm probably not going to come get another coffee here. But like, it was more just the, like, even just the act of listening makes a difference, doesn't it? To the
person. That's the thing. And there's so many still awful products and people kind of using OCD as an adjective and things like that. But I'd say the majority of the time, if you kind of explain it to someone, they're like, oh my goodness, I didn't know, I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, you can't blame someone for not knowing everything about everything, you know. Yeah. And I think that's okay if people kind of just recognize it. And a lot of the time, you know, celebrities, and you've seen newspaper articles, and they will kind of write back, because we spend a lot of time kind of writing to people and saying, oh, actually this is, you know, trivializing OCD, and often they do write back and they're like, oh my goodness, I'm really sorry, we'll take it down. And that's great. Like, that's all you can ask for, isn't it? It's just for someone to understand. I think the worst is when you explain it to someone and then they still use it as an adjective and you're like, why have I bothered?
What do you think it was about going to uni that really kind of triggered your OCD into becoming, I didn't really want to use the word triggered, but I did,
that's okay,
into becoming kind of as bad as it did, and it getting to the point where you lost all your independence? Like, what do you think it was about? Like, do you think it was because
you were
moved into a new kind of environment, or
I don't know, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because possibly, but I think it had just been getting worse and worse and kind of building up. And I loved uni. Like, I had it was weird because there were some of like the best years in terms of like the people I met, and I really enjoyed being there, but it was the absolute worst at the same time because I was so miserable in my head. But I think outwardly you maybe wouldn't have seen that, but
that's amazing. It's amazing that you can feel like you still see that time as three of the best years ever.
Yeah, it's like the best and the worst. It's so strange.
That's really awesome in a way to show that, like, you know, life can still, you can, there are still amazing positives from that time that you.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. And the positives, yeah, the positives for me were, I'd say second year was probably the worst year of my life, but at the same time, yeah, really.
Yeah, the second year, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, but being surrounded then by people who were willing to give up so much time to help,
yeah,
who I'm now like such good friends with, my closest friends, you know, that's, it's still, it's the worst year, but also the nicest in a way, because you kind of, yeah, really appreciate kind of how people were and how people looked after mm-hmm. you and things.
I think it really helps you find the people who
absolutely
the real friends.
I don't know whether it was moving to uni or whether it had just become, you know, it was getting progressively worse and worse anyway, but possibly, you know, a big change of environment and kind of moving out of your home and stuff, it is obviously very difficult, but yeah, I'm not really sure what it was, but it was grim, really, really horrible.
What would you say to yourself if you were to meet second year uni Olivia right now? What would you say to her, do you think?
That's such a good question. I feel like I should have a really good answer prepared, but
I didn't realize. I didn't write that one down. It just came. I was just thinking, like, what
it just
would
came
you,
to you?
Oh, it just came to me organically.
God,
I'm such a good interviewer.
I think I wish I'd just. Yeah, I don't know, because yeah, I wish I'd kind of heard from someone before that point. I think before it got to that point of total, that was just my entire life. Yeah. I think before it got to that point, I wish someone had told me that, like, going to therapy will work, or like just do the homework and it'll work. Mm. And someone with OCD, like if I'd heard that from somebody who had kind of recovered from it, because you hear it from therapists, don't you? You know, like, this will work if you do it, and you're like, Yeah, you read that in a book, whatever. But actually, if I'd have heard it from a much younger age, I think, from someone who had gone through it and would be like, you know what, therapy's going to be so hard, but it's nowhere near as hard as living with OCD. I think if someone had told me that, that would have been massive, because maybe I would have engaged in one of the therapy courses that I'd been on before. I guess to second year me, I would have just, I guess reassured that it will get better. There would be like a life after it, because I had completely given up at that point.
I love what you just said about therapy is going to be hard, but it's not going to be anywhere near as hard as living with OCD for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's really good.
How do you think you got from the point where you were really struggling yourself? Like, what made you then think, okay, I'm going to work for a charity and start helping other people with OCD? Like, what do you think, there was a point where you were just like, no, you know what, I'm ready to help other people? Or do you think it helped you? Or
it was a weird one. So I after I did my kind of really good course of therapy when I was at uni, I think I rung OCD Action to volunteer, but I think, like you were saying, you know, not quite ready and things like that. And then after the program aired, someone from OCD Action got in touch and was like, oh, do you want to write a blog? And I was like, oh, actually, I've just moved to London. And the office was just around the corner from where my sister lived. And I was like, do you need any volunteers? And I think I did, at the time I did it for, I just moved to London and I thought it would be really good kind of work experience. Mm-hmm. But also, yeah, like you say, this kind of, oh, maybe I can actually use this horrendous situation as a bit of a positive. Like maybe I can actually turn it into something that's good and turn my experiences into something kind of positive. Volunteered for nearly a year before getting a job there and kind of there for 7 years.
Does it help you with your own OCD, do you think?
Yes. On the whole, I think yes. Like being around people who, and that's another reason I started volunteering, was just to be around people where you didn't have to hide things for like the first time ever, and I could do something and not feel completely embarrassed about it. If I had to kind of say, oh, I just need to step out of the room to go and do this compulsion, or, you know, spend ages somewhere where normally you'd make an excuse for being in the bathroom too long or whatever. Yeah, so I think on the whole it is helpful to kind of be around people, and everybody who works there and volunteers there are the nicest people ever. And I did find it helpful to kind of, you know, you hear helpline volunteers giving out information, and it kind of reminds you, I guess, what the information is. Actually, that's what I need to do. At the same time, it has been hard, and I think, you know, yeah, like working in it
gonna
all
be
time and living as well, at times when I haven't so well, I found it really hard to kind of be there. And it's I guess it's now kind of only working in communications, because I used to work on the helpline and then I used to work with the youth project as well. And it is hard kind of talking to people who have OCD, you know, when you're kind of living with it as well, because you understand, I guess it's good in a way because you understand how difficult it is, but it's also really hard to hear because you understand how much pain that person's potentially in. But yeah, I would say on the whole, I think it's been really positive, and just constantly meeting people who understand it is amazing. But like any work, it can be really difficult at times. And now, yeah, working in communications, I think that's the best place for me because I feel like I'm still kind of helping and giving back to, you know, kind of the community, but I'm a little bit set back from kind of directly working in frontline services, which I would find a bit challenging at the moment, I think, with not feeling 100% well.
Yeah. With coronavirus, do you feel in general it's really affecting people badly with their OCD? Are people struggling more?
We've had a massive, massive increase in demand for the services. I think it's something like 37% more helpline calls, and we've nearly doubled the amount of Skype groups that we're running. Because there's been so many people getting in touch kind of who've been affected by it, and for different reasons. Some people, it's because of their therapy has been put on hold, or they're struggling to access therapy even more now because things are kind of, you know, on hold at the moment.
My therapy has just started. Having been on a waiting list for like almost 9 months, I happen to have got to the top of it in lockdown.
Are they offering it over the phone or doing anything else?
Over video call, like, I don't know, it's just a little bit more awkward.
But when you're in the room with the therapist, you might be able to physically do some of the ERP, exposure response prevention, like, so doing the thing that makes you anxious, not doing the compulsion. But can you do that over the phone? I don't know.
It's a bit of a weird dynamic, and it's something I'm not used to. So you're already going to therapy is already an uncomfortable situation. And, you know, and I'm just very aware that I only get 8 sessions and then I go back to the bottom of the waiting list. So it's,
like, is it just 8 sessions and because of the pandemic it's the same situation, or have they got any kind of leeway on like maybe extending it? Or
it's exactly the same as it would really normally, just 8 sessions.
On our helpline we have this thing called Next Steps. I don't know if I spoke to you about it, but it's where we basically like pair you up with a helpline volunteer and they'll give you a call like once a week motivate you through therapy. It's not like a motivational speaker, but you know, just someone who you can be like, I gave this challenge a go and it didn't work, and they kind of can just talk. And there are a lot of people who have been through CBT as well.
Do you have any advice for somebody that's really worried about and almost thinking, well, I'm just going to stay in my house even if lockdown is lifted, I'm just going to stay safe in my house? What should somebody do you think if they're feeling like that?
I'm sure a lot of people are feeling like that, and even, you know, people with contamination related fears, but also harm related fears, you know, people kind of worry about passing it on to people and things like that. So difficult. I mean, I can't offer advice because I'm not a medical professional, but I guess the information that we've kind of been sharing on our website and stuff, which we've had input from clinicians and you know, kind of experts, is, I guess, at the moment, if people are kind of struggling like to do the government guidelines and know more. So, you know, if you've been told to wash your hands for 20 seconds, just stick to the 20 seconds and kind of don't recognize when it's maybe becoming a compulsion rather than a guideline. And I think challenging your OCD in other ways that I guess we're allowed to do, because it's so difficult, isn't it? Because a lot of people's CBT and exposure work right now would be telling them to go and shake someone's hand or check XYZ and don't wash your hands. And obviously now we can't do that. It's like everything that we've been taught, worse fears confirmed, basically. It's awful.
It's everything you've been trying to train your brain over half your life to believe. You're trying to, you've been trying to tell it, no, everyone else is doing it, it's fine. And now the government is telling you
it's not,
to wash your hands.
I suppose it is what you just said, Olivia, about like I can never say this word, differentiation between the two things, isn't it? There's like you just said, like there's the government guidelines, washing your hands 20 seconds, but that's it. And then there's the OCD, and that's where it's difficult for people to kind of, because they intertwine,
recognize which is which.
And ultimately there's always going to be an element of risk in everything, which is what OCD hates.
And you know, it's this kind of like there's all with OCD, there's always this kind of perceived threat if you know something bad's going to happen. And
yeah,
now there's a real threat, obviously, you know, and it's horrendous. And it's, yeah, it's so incredibly difficult for people. But I think, yeah, challenging kind of OCD in other ways is one of the things that the charity has kind of recommended people do. But I think also just at the moment, just kind of people giving yourself a bit of a break and kind of recognizing that it is really hard and kind of acknowledging that it is a really distressing time, whether or not you've got OCD. Yeah, like I said, I can't offer advice, but I think just kind of reach out to charities, and there are, you know, support groups, helplines. We've got different ones kind of relating to different, I guess, groups of people. So we've got ones for people with body dysmorphia. We've got ones for parents of people with BDD, parents of young children with OCD, parents of adult children, people with OCD and depression, OCD and autism. Like, there's lots of different groups. There's contamination groups. And I think things like that at the moment, because they can be done kind of over Zoom or over the phone, you know, they are really helpful. But yeah, it's just it's a horrible situation, isn't it? And no one could have predicted how bad it would be.
But I think those groups and things will help people, even when they're at home, to feel at least a little bit connected with
others who
are experiencing similar things.
Yeah, definitely. How are you two both finding it?
You go first.
I think I'm a bit like you. On one hand, I'm finding it quite nice that I don't have to stress about normal daily things. Like, I was looking for a job or thinking about going and doing a master's, which was exciting, but it's quite stressful because I'm trying to find a job that I think I'll even be able to manage and cope with. And, and you know, I don't have to worry about really going anywhere. But on the other hand, it means I've got so much more time for the OCD to take.
Yeah.
And I'm spending more time just kind of thinking. And I don't know, that gets me down. And also the fact that I haven't got the motivation to see my friends. I think I rely on my friends quite heavily to lift my mood up so much. It means that, like, my mood side of it has dropped.
You've
got that fun side of your life. We were talking about, me and my friends are talking about the islands. Have you ever seen what's it called, the one, that Disney film about the brain? Upside Down. Have you seen Upside Down?
Inside Out. Maybe that's like the sequel that I haven't seen.
It should be. Have you seen Inside Out?
I have seen Inside Out, yeah, great film.
Love that film. But I'm thinking about the islands. Do you remember she's got all her different islands? She's got like Friendship Island, Goofy Island, which is the best one. And she's just got like all the, and I was thinking how everyone's islands have shrunk into this one little coronavirus in your house. Island. Anyway, that's irrelevant, but I think, but what you were saying about friends and those things that keep you, maybe like you were saying, when you had your worst year OCD wise, but also the friends that you made were like so amazing, that it's those little things that then feed you to keep you going.
Mood,
like you were just saying, mood is so important to being able to fight your compulsions and stuff. So yeah, it's about,
I think, a bit like you also, I'm having the, oh, I haven't done enough with my day.
Yeah.
I think we're all having that, aren't we? Yeah.
I'm not tackling OCD enough.
Yeah. I wonder whether, for anyone feeling like that, it's just about reminding ourselves that this is such a bizarre, stressful situation. And I think I saw somebody tweet about how you don't have to be your most productive during a global pandemic. Like, that's okay. Are writing award-winning plays, but if you just make a cup of tea, like, that's
okay, that's enough. Yeah, it's okay not to be productive during a pandemic. Just living through this is like, surreal. I find it really strange to think, you know, sometimes you kind of think, oh, maybe it's just us in the UK or it's just us in London or whatever, and I think, no, people like Jennifer Aniston.
I do that every so often.
Self-isolating. It's like the whole world, like every famous person you can think of. It's so strange.
The Queen, although the Queen probably...
No, she's gone off public duty now. Oh. She is hiding away.
She's chilling out somewhere. I found, for me, OCD-wise, it's been, I thought it was going to be really fine, because at the beginning of, like, coronavirus come, like people starting to talk about it, and it was like I was so anti OCD in the way I was dealing with it. So even friends of mine who don't have OCD who were going, oh god, like should we be doing this or that, and I was being the opposite. I was like, no, it's but oh my god, like just touch the tap and don't watch it, like it's fine. Wait, I probably don't want to share this because it's going to sound like I'm the reason it spread, but I was just trying to approach it in a very way.
OCD.
I'm gonna do the sensible stuff, but I'm not gonna let it, I'm not worried about it, it's gonna be fine. I had no idea that it was gonna hit like the way it has. So then for me, I think it's then kind of been same as what you just said, Sin, about having so much time to think. It's just busy brain city over here. It's just you do know what I mean, it's just like so much, and it's I also have found it's the uncertainty around your entire, like I listened to an Elizabeth Gilbert talk on YouTube, which was amazing. It was a TED talk, and in it she was like, all the time nothing's in our control and everything's uncertain, but we spend so much of our life pretending that it is, and that like everything we're under control, life's certain, especially in the Western world. And like all that's happened is this kind of situation has just reminded us or shown us, no guys, nothing is certain ever. You can't have that certainty. And I think it's that's what has been difficult for my OCD to kind of I've just been like, I need certainty in my life.
Well, that's what it is, isn't it? I mean, that's OCD, is trying to get absolute certainty. There's no possibility of that right now.
Exactly.
But then, and there's like some tiny positives in it as well, though, aren't there? Is that like, I think
definitely.
I spoke to someone recently who I'm sure wouldn't mind me kind of saying this, but you know, he was saying that for the first time they kind of felt like people understood where they were coming from as well, because you know, everybody is feeling anxious, which is awful, but at the same time maybe people will be a bit more kind of kind to people who live through this all the, not live through this, but you know, live with this kind of state of anxiety all the time. And
actually at the start I was a bit like you, I wasn't going around being like, I wasn't doing that really. I was very kind of not really anxious about it. And I think when a friend asked me, they were like, oh, you seem quite, and I said, well, because everyone else is, the level of anxiety you're all at now is just my average. So I'm just kind of, you know, this is normal for me. And then when it started to really pick up, and then it was,
maybe it will make people be more understanding, hopefully, or more empathetic to someone who has an anxiety disorder anyway. I'm aware of time, and you've got your sunbathing to do. Last but not least,
don't include that bit on the podcast. All I've got to do today is sunbathe.
I also have my sunbathing to do, so but literally could talk to you forever, and I also feel like we're getting like sneaky private like therapy help, so we're basically getting like an hour-long helpline conversation. But Susanna, do you want to ask our final question?
Yeah, our final question is kind of a recurring theme. If you could wave a magic wand and get rid of your OCD, would you?
Oh, it's such a good question.
I don't know.
Yes, but I don't know, because things would be so different, wouldn't they? And like, oh yeah, I don't know, because then I wouldn't work at OCD actually, and I wouldn't have met like all these people who've been amazing. I mean, ultimately, yes, but I think there has been, I've kind of hopefully managed to turn it a little bit into something positive. I don't know, maybe, like, I'd definitely get rid of all the, you know, the pain and distress, and, you know, no one would ever want to live with it, but I think, yeah, there are some nice things that can come from it. I don't know, it's such a hard question. How well do you do?
Oh, well, yeah, what did you say?
I said that I wouldn't get rid of the experience of having it, and having it up to this point, but now I'm done, I'm finished.
I've had my fill. It's like, I said the same as you, I think I copied.
Yeah, I think you did.
I can't imagine not having it. And I do think, like, sometimes friends remind me when I'm being like, I just wish I didn't have this problem. It's so fucking annoying. Who are like, yeah, it's really distressing for you, but yeah, they kind of remind me of like the positives that it brings me as a person. And like,
I think it makes you more caring
as a
person.
Yeah,
definitely.
You're kind of a more empathetic.
I definitely think
definitely.
It is. And imaginative. You've got to be pretty imaginative.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Obviously, I'm going to sound like biased, but I genuinely do think that people with OCD are the nicest people ever. Like, and the most creative, because the things that our brains come up with are incredibly creative.
Yeah.
And yeah, I do think that I've never met anyone with OCD who's not been a really nice person, because that's why we're worried, isn't it? You know, we're so worried about these things happening because we were there. Yeah, I think people are genuinely the nicest people.
We are two people that can assure you that you have made a positive out of having.
Thank you.
Because you've really helped us as a family.
Yeah.
And I really hope that, and I know that the things that you've said today will be really helpful to people. And
thank you.
Thank you for everything you do at OCD Action.
Well, no, thank you for everything you're doing with this podcast as well. And just generally raising awareness and just being great. And I guess, if we didn't have OCD, we wouldn't have been able to speak and have this conversation and meet. So that's a positive to take from it as well.
Thanks so much for listening. As always, please check out OCD Action and OCD UK for support. We've linked both in our show notes below. You can find us on Twitter at RepeatPod1 and Instagram at OnRepeatPodcast. You can also email us your stories and feedback on repeatpod@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you. Mental health podcast, we'd like to take this opportunity to plug Black Minds Matter UK, a charity who work towards making mental health topics relevant and accessible for all Black people in the UK. They are currently raising money to enable as many Black people as possible to access specialised help. So to find out how you can receive therapy for free, please visit their website, which is linked in our show notes. We've also linked to their GoFundMe page, where you can donate to help provide more services to those in need.